The U.S. president has applied sanctions on Iran again. But this time, these sanctions are different. For starters, the U.S. has taken the extraordinary step to apply sanctions on Iran's leader and possibly the Iranian foreign minister. How can their offer of so-called talks take place if the foreign minister is sanctioned? Well, Iran has said the door to diplomacy is now shut, and in a controversial tweet just hours ago, Trump threatened Iran with obliteration.
U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order that would impose what he calls hard-hitting financial sanctions on Iran. Trump described the sanctions as, quote, a strong and proportionate response to Iran's increasingly provocative actions. He pledged to continue to exert pressure on Iran over its nuclear program and regional influence. Trump, however, said he is not seeking a conflict with Iran and wants to reach a deal with the country.
We would love to be able to negotiate a deal if they want to. If they don't want to, that's fine too. But we would love to be able to, and frankly, they might as well do it soon.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary said the sanctions target the office of leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, while Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif will be targeted with sanctions later this week. Stephen Mnuchin added that the sanctions will be imposed on 8 senior commanders of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Iran responded by describing the measures as fruitless. Foreign Ministry spokesman Abbas Mousavi said the sanctions are tantamount to the permanent closure of the diplomatic path with, quote, the desperate U.S. government. Hours later, the U.N. Security Council called for dialogue and measures to ease tensions in the Middle East. The 15-member body also condemned the recent attacks on oil tankers in the Persian Gulf region. The U.S., Britain and Saudi Arabia had pointed their fingers to Iran over the tanker attacks. But the Islamic Republic rejected the allegation and called for a thorough investigation. The meeting was followed by more anti-Iran stance as well as a call for negotiations by the U.S.
Iran must understand that these attacks are unacceptable. It's time for the world to join us in saying so. Our policy remains an economic and diplomatic effort to bring Iran back to the negotiating table. Iran should, as I said 2 weeks ago, meet diplomacy with diplomacy.
But the Iranian ambassador to the UN dismissed any talks with the U.S. amid Washington's continued threats and sanctions against the Islamic Republic.
You cannot start a dialogue with somebody who is threatening you, who is intimidating you. Today, we just witnessed that the United States imposed another set of sanctions against Iran. How can we start a dialogue with somebody whose primary preoccupation is to put more sanctions on Iran? So the atmosphere of such a dialogue is not ready yet.
The rift between Washington and Tehran deepened after Trump pulled the U.S. out of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal in May 2018 in a unilateral decision and reimposed sanctions on Iran. The U.S. has also accused Iran of being behind attacks on 4 oil tankers off the UAE coast of Fujairah in May and another 2 tankers in the Sea of Oman. This is while Iran has dismissed the allegations as psychological warfare.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, founder of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, joins us from Washington, D.C. We have journalist and commentator Saeed Mohsin Abbas, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Saeed Mohsin Abbas, I'm going to start with you. And here we have the latest U.S. sanctions. We know U.S. sanctions on Iran is nothing new. It's been going on for decades at this point, really. But the latest sanctions is different. You have Iran's leader who has been sanctioned and possibly Iran's foreign minister.
Well, first of all, the nonsense of sanctioning the supreme leader is absolutely really, really laughable. I mean, he's not traveled outside the country for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years. I can't remember the last time he needed to leave the country. On top of that, he has no bank accounts abroad. He's not trading in any way. He's not like the Arab dictators that the Americans like to work with, who have Swiss bank accounts and offshore accounts with billions and billions of their people people's money filling up those coffers. And then, of course, when they get bumped off by the Western intelligence services, all of that money that they pile up in those foreign offshore bank accounts end up being gazumped by the big money lenders. So they're dealing with a different kind of person here, and they need to recognize that that person represents a moral political stand, an ideology. From day one, the Islamic Revolution has made it clear that they stand for a set of principles. Ayatollah Khomeini set those principles out based on Islamic morality. I think that it's still something which the West has not come to terms with, that the way we operate, the way one operates international diplomacy has to come with some fundamental principles. The first of those is respect. Respect and honesty, those two will breed trust. And from trust, you can then have a kind of a relationship that might be fraternal. The US, I'm afraid, by siding totally with Israel, by listening totally to Mossad's agencies, by working with oppressive dictators in the Arab region, has chosen to oppress the people for its oil interests. That means that a nation like Islamic Republic of Iran, which has Islamic morality at its heart, cannot really deal with a nation which has moral relativism at its core and lets the economic greed and gain dictate its foreign policy and its relations mm-hmm. with Iran. That's just not happening.
Michael Lane, we've had the pleasure of having you on the debate for quite some time, and I am sure that Iran is one of the topics that you have followed throughout the years. I'm not too sure how long back we can go with this in terms of your knowledge and familiarity with Iran. But I'm curious to know your reaction and whether there was enough intel and enough sharing of intelligence with Donald Trump when it came to the notion of sanctioning Iran's leader and the detrimental effects and consequences that could come out of that. Again, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I'm curious because to sanction Iran's leader, tell us first your reaction to that.
Well, I'm not sure that my thoughts are as important as what I think the President Trump administration's thoughts are. And that is that I have personally no idea as to what the Supreme Leader's personal assets are. I doubt anybody working with us on this show today has any idea about that. I'm sure United States intelligence thinks they have more information than we have. But that aside, we're at a situation where the sanctions that were imposed by the Obama administration were universally believed in the West, and particularly in the United States, to be the tool that brought Iran to the negotiating table over the JCPOA. Now, if sanctions worked once, the Trump administration figures that sanctions work again. Across the board, against the country, against the industries, things like that, most of the sanctions against Iran that can be imposed have already been imposed. So you're reduced to a very short list of sanctions, among them sanctions against the personal assets of people involved in the Iranian government. I'm sure that's why the president was advised to consider and take action to freeze the assets, whatever they may be, against the Supreme Leader, against Foreign Minister Zarif, against the Iranian guard commanders who partook in the action against the United States drone. It's down to a very short list. If indeed the protestations of the president of Iran are true, that the Supreme Leader has no assets outside the country, then it doesn't seem like it's as big of an insult as it's claimed to be. It would seem to be a nothing burger.
Okay. I was looking for another reaction from Michael Lane, saying Mohsen Abbas, but maybe I'll get that from you, not to want to relay my thoughts on this. But when you have a nation like Iran, given the composition of the Islamic Republic and given the function that Iran's leader has in terms of the support that it has within the country, when you have this type of approach by the U.S. sanctioning Iran's leader, who is very well known and very well followed by in the Muslim world, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be angry at the U.S. Not they weren't before, but now that number is going to get multiplied. Maybe you can follow that train of thought and elaborate more on it.
Well, I do think the American administration has miscalculated the mood and the result of their act within the Islamic Republic's, general population. And the wider, broader Muslim fraternity that you mentioned exists right across not only the Middle East, but also in the West, and actually also in the United States itself. And I think the more that America or the American administration drives these very personalized, nonsense procedures of economic warfare, the more actually America paints itself as an aggressor, as unreasonable, as a nation which is bullying other nations to do as they're told. It's not really a good look for the United States. It also doesn't really garner the trust of the Iranian people, which obviously that's partly what they're doing with these economic sanctions initially. What they wanted to do was to get the Iranian people so fed up with the lack of economic stability or balance that they would rise up against the regime effectively, or as they call it, the regime change agenda in Islamic Republic that they've been on for so many years. They thought the public will rise up against them. In fact, it's having the reverse effect, because the people on the ground are blaming the US. They're blaming Donald Trump. They're saying that actually, we went in good faith, had this JCPOA agreement. It's the Americans who walked out of it, and now they've increased their war through economics, and it is a war. America is at war with Iran already, fighting through psychological operations, fighting through economic operations, fighting through cultural warfare. This is all warfare on the people of Iran. Psychological warfare is there, but actually it's going to backfire, because the psychology of the Iranian people is basically to unite and galvanize around Ayatollah Khamenei. And now that he is being directly targeted, that just achieves that purpose for the Islamic Republic even more, because they're saying, well, not only are they doing it generally to us, they're actually now specifically targeting Javad Zarif, mm-hmm. and the leader, as well as others. So I think it's going to backfire, and the Americans need to think again. They need to understand that this is not going to work. The sanctions will not work. The further they go in this direction, the more likely they are to get a belligerent opposition. And if it forces them ultimately to try and turn their hand to the military equation, then that's going to blow up in the face of the whole world, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what has happened hours ago. Today, first, Rouhani has said that the new U.S. sanctions precluded any diplomacy, and it called the White House actions mentally retarded. Michael Lane. So then you had a response by Trump. Iran's very ignorant and insulting statement put out today shows that they do not understand reality. Any attack by Iran on anything American will be met with great and overwhelming force. In some areas, overwhelming will mean obliteration.
Yes, this is diplomacy, I guess, although it's not particularly diplomatic language. They're talking to each other across Twitter, which just ought to be banned as far as diplomacy is concerned. Here's where we are. Again, going back to my first answer. The United States believes that sanctions is what brought Iran to the negotiating table 5 years ago, 6 years ago for the JCPOA. They believe that's what's going to bring Iran back to the negotiating table, that President Trump wants to expand the conversation to all of the activities that it objects to. So when you have a preclusion, if you will, of diplomatic words, that doesn't seem to advance the ball of either party. Iran would I think, really, really like to get back to the JCPOA with perhaps some additional small giveaways that they would like to that they would likely agree to. That wouldn't be too overbearing on them and would give Trump a chance to claim victory. But without any discussions at all, it doesn't even get back to a situation where Iran would like to be. President Trump, of course, he has the flexibility of being very magnanimous. He's called, I think, for discussions or negotiations every day for the past 5-6 days, the reason being that he can do so. It's not our economy that's sanctioned. It's not our people that are going through the hardship. It's a situation where the leaders of Iran really have to make a decision. At this point, it appears as if they made a decision. they're going to ride it out and see what happens. Well, that's fine. I guess that's good for today or tomorrow or a month or 6 months. We'll see in 6 months if they still have the same attitude or if they still have it in a year. But I think President Trump is pretty solid on where he wants this to go.
You know, what's very interesting, say Mohsen Abbas, and this has been analyzed, but I need to bring it forward and ask your reaction to it, is that many say that this is a crisis that was U.S.'s doing, and it began when it pulled out of the nuclear deal, the JCPOA. Now, putting that aside, of which we're seeing how it is avalanched into what it is now, but there's one thing that brought these two countries very close to war, and that was the downing of that drone by Iran. Now, Russia has come up and said, we have military intelligence that shows that the U.S. drone was in Iranian airspace when it was shut down by Iran last week. Nikolai Patrushev, Secretary of Russia's Security Council, in a trilateral meeting with Israel and with the U.S. when Mike Pompeo was in Israel. If that is true, what then?
I think that's a very serious charge, and if the Russians have that evidence and they can present it to the public, it would be a very serious indictment of U.S. policy in that region. I mean, we, of course, who understand the U.S.'s track record on these things, have a huge suspicion that actually what they're doing is deliberate provocation. They want the Islamic Republic to react, and those reactions allow them to get their own allies more aligned to the idea of backing a strike or even a unilateral strike. It creates the mood. So who has something to gain from this? Does the Islamic Republic of Iran really have anything to gain from a war with the United States of America? I mean, let's face it, the U.S. is spending on its military might is something like $650 billion. The Iranians have something like $65 billion to spend. So there is no comparison militarily in terms of, you know, who would feel more confident perhaps of a victory. But you can't have a victory in this situation. So whether you're going to knock down drones or whether you're going to sort of have warfare in the Hormuz or you're going to fire a few cruise missiles at each other, there will be no winners. Even if the Americans were to take those options and to do a punitive strike on, say, US, Iranian nuclear facilities, do you really think that the Islamic Republic of Iran won't have backup facilities or won't be able to put together those facilities very soon after any such strike? That's one possible scenario that the American administration is possibly going to be considering, and the Israelis will certainly be pushing it. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any sense in this direction that they're going at the moment. What they need to do, the Americans need to recognize that the Islamic Republic of Iran is the major player in terms of both historically and presently in the Middle East and in that region. They need to stop putting these stupid clauses in, which are basically asking the Islamic Republic to drop all its defense guard, i.e. get rid of its ballistic missile, if you like, programs, to stop defending itself in other territories, to stop defending oppressed peoples, uh-huh. where, as in Syria, as in Yemen, arguably. You see, they need to take these clauses out, let right. alone the whole idea of Iran not having any ability to have nuclear facilities. I mean, it's for peaceful purposes, what's wrong with having the ability to have a nuclear program?
Yes. Well, Michael Lane, you heard, I'm sure you heard this Russian piece of information. Of course, Iran has maintained that the U.S. was intruding Iranian airspace, and it did send out warnings on this drone. Now, I would think that this needs to be obviously presented and somehow for the international community, i.e. through the U.N. maybe, for this to be pursued. And then you have what Mohammad Javad Zarif has also said. Twitter account, nothing that I'm pulling out of the air here. He has said in his Twitter account, more evidence, including encroachment of an MQ-9 spy drone on 526, speedboat purchases, and phone calls planning to attribute ship attacks to Iran. Now, if this piece of information, in which he says is attributing the ship attacks to Iran, but includes the UK in it, what if this is proven? Then what would your reaction be?
Well, yes, clearly Russia has to provide the evidence that it says it has on this. The United States has already released a number of its photographs and radar printouts and things like that, demonstrating its position that, number one, it did see an Iranian naval vessel up against the hull of one of the tankers that was bombed. We did produce the radar printouts that showed that the drone was clearly in international airspace at that time. But if Russia has evidence to the contrary, they ought to produce it. Also, it would seem to me very, very important that there be timelines associated with this. You know, for the drones who have inadvertently violated Iranian airspace, gotten out and then be shot at would be a lesser offense than if it was actually inside Iranian airspace when the missile was launched. So we need to have that kind of information. As far as collusion between other powers about the bombing of the tankers to make it look a false flag, if you will, I haven't seen any evidence of that yet, but if such evidence exists, it ought to be brought forward, and it would certainly change the game on the face of it. This would be tremendous news.
30 seconds, Said Mohsen Abbas. Iran has said that's it. The door to diplomacy is shut. So at this point, where to next? 30 seconds, please.
Well, I think that they need other mediating parties to get involved, because the more this saber rattling happens, more this exchange occurs, the more likelihood and chance there is of a genuine war kicking off. And that's not in the interests of the entire world, let alone the Middle East. So the Russians and the Chinese and the British have a responsibility to get involved. And I think get the Americans to certainly be more reasonable and actually drop these ridiculous demands and get back with a genuine set of proposals via other nations. And if there's some reasonable reason for the Iranians to be brought back to the negotiating table, then that would be fine. But at the moment, as it stands, I don't think the Islamic Republic has any reason to sit back on the table. They're ready for whatever consequences that brings.
Thank you very much. Let me thank our guests, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane. And thank you, journalist and commentator Said Mohsen Abbas. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale, entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.